Hey, hey, Echo. It is awesome to get to be here with you guys today. I look forward to this day every year. I'm so thankful to get to be here with you. I want to welcome you guys over at Sunnyvale. We love you. We love you at South San Jose and all of you joining us online today. We are thankful that you're there. So now, as every good Mother's Day talk does, you have to begin with a story about one of your kids. And so I will not disappoint you. I will begin with a story, but this time the child will remain anonymous due to the implications of this story. So a couple months ago, I was having a conversation with one of my sons, so that kind of narrows it down. And he says to me, "Now, Mom, if the NFL doesn't work out for me and I don't make it in the NBA, then I think I'll become a garbage man." And I was like, okay, well, you know, shoot for the stars. I'm glad to see all that ambition in your life. And he's like, "What? I mean, even being a garbage man would be better than a stay-at-home mom." Thank you. Thank you. So, and then he quickly adds, "I mean, no offense." Of course, none taken, none at all. And so he was like, "I mean, think about it, Mom. At least the garbage man makes money for his job. You don't even get paid for what you do." I was like, "Oh, that's true." So for all you moms out there who think that your kid may not say it very often, but they actually do really respect and appreciate the role that you play in their life, I'm just here to burst your bubble today. They don't. You are lower than a garbage man to them. Well, at least I am. So maybe your kids respect you more than mine do me. But before we go any further, I just want to pause and acknowledge that Mother's Day can be a really painful experience for some people. And so if you are in that boat, I just want to say I'm glad you're here. And some of you wish that you were moms and you are not for whatever reason, and that can be really painful. Others of you may have a bad relationship with your mom or with your kids, and that stirs up a lot. And then I know many of you have lost your mom, and so this day is a day of grieving for you. And so if you find yourself in that category of people, I just want to say two things to you specifically today. The first one is, I'm proud of you for getting here, because it would have been a lot easier just to hibernate today and let this day pass. But you made a courageous choice to get to church today, and I believe God wants to bless you and that he has a word for you. The second thing I want to say is that it is okay to not be okay. And that I know that when someone says, "Hey, how you doing?" the correct response is, "I'm great, how are you?" But you don't have to put on this facade and pretend like your life is going great when you're actually dying on the inside. And this is a safe place to not be okay. And so I just want to let you know that I'm thinking of you today, and I'm proud of you for being here in this service. And today, yeah, we can applaud for all those people. Today, what we're going to talk about is different seasons in life and how life is full of seasons. And so, you know, some of you don't have kids yet. Mother's Day is like this far concept. You are not a mom, not sure you'll ever be a mom, whatever. But you might be a student. You're in that season of your life. You might be a young professional. That's a season of life. Some of you are in that newly parents season. You have like a newborn and you don't have any sleep, but you got a lot of joy and a lot of love for this precious little life. And some of you are kind of in those middle years. That's kind of where Andy and I are. We are just grinding it out through the middle years. We're driving our kids to 14 practices a week and just fighting through homework every night. You got to power through those middle years. And then some of you, I know, are in that empty nest phase. And for the first time in a long time, you don't have kids in the home anymore, and you're trying to find your new normal again. And there are different seasons of life, and with every season, there comes joy, and there comes hardship, there's trials, there's lessons to be learned. And every season builds upon the season before it. You see, God intends for us to gather a certain strength from every season that we go through. But whether or not we gain that strength is dependent upon how we will respond to the season that we are in. And so our response to the season that we're in determines whether we will develop the strength that God has for us or we will diminish that strength. One response leads us closer to God. Another response will drive a wedge in our relationship with him. And so today, we're going to be looking at this one character in the Bible, and I love her. Her name is Mary of Bethany, and she is this amazing woman. We get three snapshots of her life in the Bible. I'm calling them today Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3. And we're going to see how she reacts to the acts in her life, because every season requires a different response. And we will see that from her. We will see how she responds differently in every season, because every season requires a different response of us. And I want you to see in Mary of Bethany how she makes the choice. She responds in a way that draws her near to God. Now, before we go any further, I want to let you know that today's experience is going to feel a little bit different because of the way I've structured it. I feel like it would be really cool to incorporate some worship music, because worship music is one of the things that God has used in my life to really carry me through different seasons of life. And so at different points during my message, we're going to have some musicians come out and sing for us. Now, I thought about doing the whole thing myself, like I could teach and sing, but I thought you guys might enjoy the experience a little more if, like, we just all stayed in our own lane. And so I will stick to the teaching, they're going to stick to the singing, and hopefully it will be an amazing experience for all of us. So we are going to start with Act 1 of Mary of Bethany's life, and I am calling this act the Act of Desperation. And so we're going to find Mary in Luke 10, and she's going to be sitting at the feet of Jesus. So if you want to turn with me in your Bible, it's Luke 10, 38. It starts off by saying, as Jesus and the disciples continued on her way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet. And that phrase is really important. So I want everyone at all three of our campuses to repeat that phrase with me. What did Mary do? She sat at the Lord's feet. Thank you. And she was listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. She came to Jesus and said, "Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me." But the Lord said to her, "My dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. There's only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it." Another translation says, "Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her." Now, that phrase that she sat at the Lord's feet, it's not merely a phrase letting us know the location in the room where Mary found herself. That phrase actually signifies a very intentional discipleship relationship. There's another place in the Bible where it talks about how the Apostle Paul sat at the feet of Gamaliel because he was being trained under him. And so this was kind of a countercultural thing that they're doing here, because women would never traditionally be invited into these types of settings. A rabbi in those days would not even speak to a woman in public. And so Mary is breaking every cultural mold here. But Jesus not only allows her to be there, he publicly applauds her choice to sit and learn from him. And it was definitely a choice. It was a very courageous and intentional choice. It was like a Rosa Parks kind of choice. Like, I know I'm not supposed to be here, but this is the right place to be, and I'm not moving from this place because I want to learn from this man. And I just see in Mary how she recognizes that there is no more important place than she could be in that moment than learning from Jesus. She recognizes that this is a valuable experience, and she's not going to let it pass her by. In Mary, there is this hunger to learn and grow. We call it here at Echo Church a tenacious teachability. It's one of our leadership values. And that she is determined that she will push through whatever barrier she has to in order to sit at the feet of this man and learn from him. Have you guys ever noticed how we are all a lot more teachable when we get in situations where we are over our heads, where we are like, I need some help here. Like, I do not know what to do. I am at a crossroads. I need to make a decision. And I am super duper teachable right now. So anyone want some advice? So yeah, I mean, we start Google searching. We're like polling our friends. We're asking our mentors. When we are hungry, there are a lot of different sources that we can sit at the feet of. But Mary chooses to sit at the feet of Jesus. I want to tell you a story, a very personal story, about a time in my life where I felt like I was just in over my head. And it's surrounding the experience of bringing home our son Sammy when we adopted him nearly 8 years ago. He was just under the age of 2 years old. And when we were in Ethiopia with him, he was so happy. He was playful. He ate great. He slept great. It was like a dream. But as soon as we got on the airplane to come home, there was a switch that flipped in him, and he began this horrible grieving process. He had so much fear and grief, and the processing through this reattachment was just an incredible thing. And when we were at home, we could never be out of his sight. So he was with me 24 hours a day and most of the time in my arms. If he wasn't in my arms, he was at my feet with his arms up. And so I was constantly with him. And then it was funny because he always wanted to be held, and yet he didn't want to be touched. It was a strange, like, attachment issue. And nighttime was the worst because at nighttime, he had all this fear rising up in him about abandonment, I guess. And he was, it took him over an hour to fall asleep. Andy and I would have to sit there with him while he fell asleep so that he would go to sleep. And then every 3, 4, 5 hours, he would wake up. So we're talking multiple times a night. He was up for 18 months, every single night. Andy and I were exhausted. We were at the end of ourselves. We did not know what to do for this child. And he would cry and scream these night terrors. And it was like nothing I'd ever seen. I've seen kids cry themselves to sleep. I'm not opposed to that. Like Cademan and Karis did it. But Sammy was different. He would bury his head in the mattress and push his little body up against the side of the crib as far away from me as he could get. And if I would rub his back to try to calm him down, it was like he could not handle the human touch. He would want to crawl out of his own skin. He was so uncomfortable. It was just a horrible thing to watch. Every adoptive parent knows that adoption is a beautiful and redemptive thing, but it is also brutal. And no child should be forced to go through the loss of their family. No child should be forced to have to learn to reattach and trust people that look different and smell different and sound different. And during this season, I just felt so overwhelmed and desperate. And every morning I would sit there with my Bible open and my journal open, and I would just pray, Jesus, speak to me. Tell me what to do because I am so lost right now. How do I love this child? What does he need from me? I was so desperate for Jesus. And in those quiet moments each morning, he would meet with me there. And he would reveal to me how to love on days when love was hard to come by. And he would show me what to do. And you know, some of you guys are right there today where you just feel desperate for God to speak into your situation. You are in over your heads. You have a decision to make. You're at a critical juncture in your life. And you are thinking, God, I need you to show up right now and tell me what to do. And when you're in a moment like that, there's a lot of different places you could go. You could Google it. You could read modern psychology books. You could talk to your friends and your family and your mentors. And none of those are bad things. But like Mary, there's one thing that's most important. There's one source that we should prioritize sitting at the feet of. And so I want to ask you today, this is my question for you. At whose feet are you going to sit? In a moment when you are desperately in need of guidance, at whose feet are you going to sit? As the musicians play this song for us, I want you to make it your prayer to listen to these words and just to say, God, I am looking to you. You're where my help's come. You're where my help comes from. I need you to give me vision. I need you to help me not be overwhelmed in this season. God, I am looking to you.
God, I look to you. I won't be overwhelmed. Give me vision to see things like you do. God, I look to you. You're where my help comes from. Give me wisdom. You know just what to do.
Act two of Mary of Bethany's life is what I am calling the act of grief. And we're going to see Mary right after her brother Lazarus dies. And Mary and her sister Martha had called for Jesus to come. And you see, Mary and Martha and Lazarus were friends of Jesus. They weren't just random acquaintances. He knew them. He loved them. And they had called for Jesus to come. They were expecting him to come and to heal their brother, like he had healed so many other people, but Jesus didn't come, and Lazarus died. And so the sisters are left not only in grief, but also deeply confused, because Jesus could have gotten there. He was in close enough proximity to them that he could have come, and yet for some reason he didn't. That is a dark, soul-searching place to be. To feel like you have a critical need in your life. You've asked God to come through for you. You know that he could, and yet for some reason he doesn't. You guys ever been there? I know I have, and it is not easy. So that is the situation that we're walking into when we look at this passage in John chapter 11. Jesus is going to show up 4 days after Lazarus has already been put into the grave. And this time, Mary is not going to sit at the feet of Jesus. This time, we're going to see her falling at the feet of Jesus. Verse 28. Then Martha returned to Mary. She called Mary aside from the mourners and told her, "The teacher's here and he wants to see you." So Mary immediately went to him. When Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died." I loved how Mary just states the obvious, that this was Jesus. This was her friend. And if he had showed up, he could have done something about this. She doesn't try to conceal her grief. Jesus knows that he could have prevented his friend from this kind of pain. And so does Mary. And yet here they are, right in the middle of it, with her falling, crumpled up, at his feet on a dusty road in Bethany, just weeping. And I want you to notice how Jesus responds to her. It says, when Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up within him, and he was deeply troubled. "Where have you put him?" he asked them. They told him, "Lord, come and see." Then Jesus wept. The people who were standing nearby said, "See how much he loved him." I love that Jesus wept with her. Even though he knew he was about to reverse this whole situation, he was about to blow their minds with the greatest miracle that had ever been performed. He was about to raise their brother from the dead. But before he did that, he took a moment to linger there in their grief, to allow his heart to be tender to the pain that his friends were in. He just walked right in the middle of that cesspool of grief and sat there with them. And he wept, and his emotions got caught up inside his heart because he saw his friends grieving, and it moved him. Many of you know that Andy and I struggled with infertility for about 6 years. And that was a really painful time for us, especially for me. And I prayed many a prayers and cried many a tears during those 6 years. But then one day in October 2012, one of the happiest days of my life, I found out I was pregnant. And I cannot even describe the joy that I felt in that moment. It was like the sun was shining and birds were singing, and I was fully convinced that at any moment people in color-coordinated clothing was just going to pop out of bushes and start dancing in the street like La La Land. I mean, it was that kind of joy for me. I was so overwhelmed with gratitude. And I could imagine what God must have been like in heaven, like watching me in anticipation, like a parent at Christmas time when you know what's about to happen and you are so excited. So I just saw God up there clapping his hands and laughing with joy as he watched me unwrap this gift. Well, then several weeks later, I started to have some back pain and a little spotting. And I started to cry, and I said to Andy, "I think something's wrong." And I cried myself to sleep that night, went to the midwife the next morning, and there on the monitor was that precious little heartbeat. And she said, "You know what? Don't be scared. Sometimes this happens, and it's completely normal." And so I tried to calm my heart. She said, "Come back in a couple of days. We'll check again." So went home. That was a Wednesday. Go back on Friday. Lots of prayers, lots of anxiety. But on Friday, there it was again, that sweet little heartbeat right there on the screen. And so she just said, "Just don't be anxious. It can be completely normal that this happens." Well, the following week, we were supposed to go to San Diego for a vacation that we had been planning for months. And so we were kind of like not knowing what to do, but we went ahead and packed everything up. We had two little boys, very young. They didn't even know I was pregnant. And all through the weekend, Andy and I are just praying, desperate prayers, "God protect this baby," and lots of anxiety. Sunday night rolls around. We've got the car all packed. But I start cramping, and the spotting picks up, and I know what's happening. And so the next morning, with the car fully loaded to go to San Diego, we go to the midwife, and this time there's no heartbeat. And I know that many of you women have been there, and you know the pain of that devastation that you feel in that moment. So we drove to San Diego, and I was in a lot of pain physically, and my heart was just wrecked. And the question that kept running through my head was, "God, how is this kind? How is this loving? You say that you are kind and that you're loving, but this feels cruel and it feels mean-spirited. Like, why not just not let me get pregnant? I was used to that kind of pain. Why would you give me this gift and then snatch it away from me? You could have done something about this." I had no trouble believing that God was fully capable of moving on our behalf, but I was just so confused that he didn't. Have you ever been there where you have just been beating on the chest of God and saying, "God, you could have healed the cancer. You could have saved my marriage. you could have protected my child. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. You know, grief is deep waters. And I wish that I had a lot more time today to unpack it and to talk it through and to share with you how Jesus has redeemed our story and he was with us the whole way. But the thing that I want to leave seared in your memory today is this mental image of Mary, who was a well-respected woman in her community. And yet she was crumpled at the feet of Jesus, pouring out her grief at him, with him. That she didn't try to conceal it. She didn't hold back. That is where she took her grief. And I also want you to see in that mental image that you're creating how Jesus responded to her. The tenderness, the love, the compassion that he cried to. You know, in every season, we have to choose how we're going to respond. And what Satan would like to do is he would like to turn your grief into bitterness and anger towards God. He would like for you to isolate yourself. But what Jesus wants us to do is to bring our grief and lay it at his feet and to experience the comfort that he has for us. I know many of you are in the middle of some deep grief and loss today. And your heart is so heavy that you don't know how much longer that you can bear it. And my question to you today is, where will you take your grief? Will you bottle it up on the inside and isolate yourself until it almost kills you? Or will you pour it out at the feet of Jesus and receive the comfort that he has to offer you? Mary was not alone in her suffering. He was right there with her, and he's right there with you too.
When I walk through deep waters, I know that you will be with me. Standing in the fire, I will not be overcome. Through the valley of the shadow, I will not fear. Of night will not overtake me. I am pressing into you. And Lord, you fight my every battle, and I will not fear. No, I am not alone.
Act 3 of Mary's life, this is the final time in Scripture that we get to catch a glimpse. It's what I'm calling the act of surrender. And this time we're going to see her at Jesus' feet again. But she's not sitting at his feet to learn, and she's not falling at his feet in grief. This time, she's kneeling at his feet in worship. This scene is going to take place about a week before Jesus goes to the cross and dies. And of course, nobody knows that, not fully at least. There's some tension in the air. But it seems as if somehow Mary gets it, that she realizes that this is a moment that she will never have again, that this is a sacred moment. And so I want you to keep that in mind as we consider this passage. John chapter 12, starting in verse 1. 6 days before the Passover celebration began, Jesus arrived in Bethany, the home of Lazarus, the man he had raised from the dead. And can we just pause there for a moment and all agree together that that would be the coolest tagline a human could possibly have? I'm the man Jesus raised from the dead. I mean, put that on your Instagram profile. You're the winner. Verse 2, a dinner was prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha served, and Lazarus was among those who ate with him. Then Mary took a 12-ounce jar of expensive perfume made from essence of nard, and she anointed Jesus' feet with it, wiping his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance. Now, this jar of perfume was worth a year's wages. So we are talking tens of thousands of dollars here. This was an extravagant gift. It was a crazy gift. It was a gift of gratitude. And it's interesting, Mary doesn't say anything in this passage, but as I have tried to imagine the script running through her head, I think she is saying with this gift that I owe you everything. You gave me back my brother from the grave. You gave me a whole new meaning for my life. I have peace in my heart. I have a connection with God I never knew was possible. You are so good. And I just want to do something, give you something to try to represent how incredibly thankful I am. It continues, it says, but Judas Iscariot, the disciple who would soon betray him, said, that perfume was worth a year's wages. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor. Not that he cared for the poor. He was a thief. And since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. Jesus replied, listen to this, leave her alone. She did this in preparation for my burial. You'll always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. Jesus defended her devotion. He received this extravagant gift of gratitude. I love that. I love how Mary is just so gutsy and bold in this passage. She has reached the point in her life where she's like, I don't care what you think about me. And she has one person in that room that she is trying to please. And she's honestly not 100% sure how he's going to respond either, because it's not like this has ever been done before. She is setting a precedent here that is a new territory. And so she goes into this room, and Jesus receives it, and he affirms it. And it's so beautiful. She gave him her most expensive possession, the most costly sacrifice that she could give to him, because he's worthy of that. He is worthy of anything we could surrender, any sacrifice we could give. And as I was thinking about this topic of surrender and sacrifice, I had all these different images come into my mind of families from within our church. And I wanted to tell you a few of the stories. There's one couple, I can't tell you their names because of security reasons, but they felt like God was leading them to sell everything that they owned and to move to a country that was neither safe nor comfortable in order to share the good news of Jesus and the love of God with people that didn't know about it. I'm thinking about another couple in our church, and I won't tell you their names because it would embarrass them, but they felt called by God to single-handedly fund the construction of Sunnyvale's playground on that campus. They saw that we had a need. They knew that Echo wanted to build a playground. So many young families in Sunnyvale, but we didn't have the funds to do it. And they said, you know what? We're going to do that. And they gave a very costly sacrificial gift because the king is worthy. And I'm thinking of so many families in our church right now. The Pattisons, the Sablons, the Yangs. There are so many, the Santos family, that decided that they would break the rhythm of their family, their normal, and that they would bring into their home a foster child or adopt an orphan. Because they looked at these kids and they said, they are made in the image of God and they deserve a loving and stable home. And it may not always be easy and it may not always be fun, but he's worthy and it's worth it. And I'm thinking of this precious girl that Andy had a conversation with recently. And she was in this relationship with someone that she loved very much, but she knew it wasn't God's very best for her life. And so with tears streaming down her face, she explained to Andy how she had decided to walk away from this relationship. And the thing she said that stuck with me is she said, Jesus, I want you more. There is pain in a sacrifice like that. It cost them something. But the thing about surrender is that surrender requires a wider perspective. That you can't just think about this day. You have to think about that day. That all of us are going to have maybe 85, 90 years on this earth. And then we are going to wake up into all of eternity. And we may have some pain in our decisions to obey Jesus. We may have to make some sacrificial decisions that cost us something as we take steps of obedience. But it is very short-lived in light of eternity. And I guarantee you, if you are a follower of Jesus, when you wake up into all of eternity, whatever sacrifice you made for the king and the kingdom on this earth, it will be worth it. And you will wish that you had offered him more. You will wish that you had more to give because he is worthy of whatever sacrifice we can offer. And I feel like Mary got it. That she brought him the most precious thing she owned because she knew that he was worthy. It didn't make sense to the rest of them, but it didn't need to because it wasn't for them. It was for him. You know, in Act 1 and Act 2 of Mary's life, she came to Jesus because she needed something from him. So she sat at his feet and she received wisdom. And then she fell at his feet and she received comfort. But in Act 3, she wants to bring something to him. She wants to give him the most costly thing she could offer as a gift of gratitude for all he had done for her. I think it's such a beautiful picture. And as our musicians play this last song over us, what I want you to do is close your eyes and create this mental picture in your mind of this scene unfolding. That here Mary is walking into this room crowded with men. And everybody's kind of looking around, a little judgmental, saying, what in the world is going on here? And Mary's got some fear in her. She's a little nervous about this whole thing. Her hands are probably trembling as she holds this jar. But she is steadfast and she is focused. Her eyes are locked on his. And she walks towards Jesus and kneels down at his feet and she worships. And in that holy moment, what she is saying with her actions is that you are worth it all. I owe you all that I have. Everything I own is yours. My life is yours. My money is yours. My praise is yours. You are worthy. Imagine the scene in your mind as the song is sung.
It all revolves around your throne. Who can know your glory? So high above, yet slain for us, you alone are worthy. And the praise is yours. And the praise is yours. You're the one we bow before. end is to come. God of every moment, forever crowned, exalted now, you alone are holy, and the praise is yours, and the praise is yours, you're the one we bow before, reigning over us as we lift you up. As we lift you up, you will reign forevermore.
Important when we worship that we engage our minds, that we don't just sing thoughtless words, but that we're actively thinking about what we're saying. The Bible says that we need to love God with all of our heart, our soul, and our mind. And so often when I am worshiping, what I'm doing is I am imagining in my head the face of Jesus. And I'm picturing myself standing in his presence. And I don't imagine him as he was that day on the cross, where he was bloody and bruised and beaten and died for our sins. I imagine him as he is today, that he is seated high on a throne, that he is glorious in splendor. And I imagine his eyes full of fire, and that there's a crown on his head, and that light and beauty are radiating out of his body, and that he is over all. And I imagine this king of the universe that holds the world in his hand, and yet he knows my name, and he loves me intimately, and I worship him. He is worthy of every sacrifice and every act of surrender that we can lay before him today. He is glorious. And so at all three of our campuses today, I want to invite you to stand with us. And the next few minutes, we are going to pour out our praise at the feet of Jesus, because he is worth it today. He is high above, no matter what you're going through. It doesn't matter if you have had a bad day or a bad week or a bad year, because he is over it all. And he is worthy because his name is worthy. And so today I'm gonna ask you that, just like Mary of Bethany, that you bring your very best, that you hold nothing back, that you pour it all out at the feet of Jesus as we lift up his name in these next few minutes together. He is worthy. The praise is yours, Jesus.